You're listening to the Let's Talk Future podcast series presented by Oppenheimer. If you're interested in the economy, the markets, and investing in general, you've come to the right place. This series was created to fascinate and enlighten every type of investor. Curious about the latest consumer trends? How about innovations in healthcare or technology? The Let's Talk Future series definitely has you covered. Through timely and relevant conversations, we deliver some of the best thought leadership in the financial services industry. Our renowned hosts and guests explore big questions and big ideas and leave you with actionable insights. In this episode, our guest is Michael Cella, U.S. Head of Consumer Investment Banking at Oppenheimer. And our host is Jane Ross, Managing Director and Editor-in-Chief of the Let's Talk Future podcast series. This episode was recorded on March 11, 2024. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, and welcome back to Let's Talk Future. I'm your host, Jane Ross, and in this episode, we're going to focus on today's consumer and the new mainstream. We're going to talk about some surprising trends and interesting companies for those in search of the next big thing. Certainly, compared to the pre-COVID consumer, today's spenders seem to be a bit more adventurous and experiential. And here to talk about this new mainstream and its many opportunities is our guest, Michael Cella. Michael has 20 years of investment banking experience, and he focuses on working with dynamic, growth-oriented consumer companies on mergers and acquisitions, advisory, and capital markets transactions. Michael joined Oppenheimer last year to lead the U.S. consumer investment banking team, and this is his first time on the Let's Talk Future podcast. So with all of that, welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Jane.
So good to have you here. All right, well, why don't you orient us? Why don't you start with a discussion of a macro overview of the consumer, you know, where we are in spending trends, strengths, weakness, stuff like that.
That sounds great. So to start with the economy, let's maybe take a step back and chat about where we could have been and why we are where we are today. If you look back to 2022 and even last year, many spoke of an upcoming recession with high probabilities. But that hasn't materialized, and instead, many got it wrong, as there's been quite strong resilience for both consumers and businesses. The U.S. economy continues to grow despite interest rates at 23-year highs and soaring inflation. With consumer spending accounting for about 70% of the U.S. economy, how the consumer reacted to these headwinds is important to the overall economy. What happened is that consumers generally managed through higher interest rates, some benefiting from locking in low interest rate mortgages and maintaining higher cash balances to support ongoing spending. Also, the stock market has done well broadly, touching on all-time highs in recent weeks and creating a wealth effect that allows consumers to feel comfortable spending. The U.S. economy has continued to add jobs at a steady pace as work-from-home policies have supported ongoing participation in the labor market. Additionally, productivity improved, and with the hope of AI, there's real optimism that productivity will continue to improve in the coming years, perhaps even at accelerating levels and offsetting inflation. While the economy isn't out of the woods yet, GDP and the consumer have remained resilient.
Right. And you mentioned inflation, so I think we should stay on that for a moment because we've all grappled with higher food inflation for sure. So why don't you give us your thoughts about that?
Yeah. Food inflation has been especially apparent in recent years, impacting the consumer eating out and cooking at home. Food spending represents just over 10% of disposable income and is at its highest level since 1991. This has created terms like shrinkflation, which describes where the amount you get in a package has come down in order to make it seem like prices aren't going up to the consumer. Restaurants have been challenged with wage increases and staffing issues coming out of the pandemic as well. Independent restaurants in particular have had a harder time with these challenges, but takeaway restaurants, especially the larger chains, have seen growth and limited service restaurants are growing at higher rates. There's also real excitement around AI and automation within the restaurant sector. Popular restaurant chain Sweetgreen, for example, is in the early stages of rolling out its transformational automation technology and the promise of significant margin improvement that comes with that. As it relates to takeout, the proliferation of delivery apps is creating new types of restaurants to service this demand. and operating out of ghost kitchens is a new business model that's certain to evolve in the coming years. Wonder is another example of a company disrupting food and beverage. Run by the executive behind Jet.com and former CEO of Walmart.com, Wonder has raised around $800 million to date and now has built 10 locations in and around New York City. They're looking to continue their expansion to 100 locations open in the next 2 years. This concept is being portrayed as a new kind of food hall and is calling itself the super app of mealtime. These are just a few examples of how legacy businesses can evolve and new businesses created to address new consumer demands.
And so many new vocabulary terms too, shrinkflation, ghost kitchens. So why don't we stay on that with food and beverage? What are you seeing out there in terms of exciting opportunities in food and beverage?
Sure. I think a key trend is what's going on with health and wellness, and that's driving the trends. This is accelerated with food companies proactively addressing the impact of Ozempic and other weight loss drugs that have become more mainstream. In beverage, the highest selling beer of any kind at Whole Foods is a brand called Athletic Brewing Company, which is non-alcoholic. This is a huge deal, and the category of non-alcoholic beer continues to grow. Dry January used to be a curiosity and is now mainstream, and Athletic Brewing Company is helping to create occasions to enjoy a great product in social situations without feeling isolated for not partaking. This, of course, plays very well into the health and wellness trends. It's no accident that the company is called Athletic, which has universal appeal and reflects wellness. Similarly, as sugary sodas or those with artificial sweeteners gain backlash, even water can be cool. A company, Liquid Death, which benefits from fantastic and fun marketing, is growing like crazy. And consumers love the irony of holding a big aluminum can of water that may resemble a craft beer at first glance. This is a brand that speaks to the consumer, and consumers are proud to have it be a part of their own individual stories. This brand is everywhere, but importantly, also at lots of venues like concerts where it's cool to be seen. And maybe this shouldn't be a surprise, but Live Nation, the leading live entertainment company, is a key investor in Liquid Death. And doesn't hurt that the brand is also working to take plastic water bottles out of the market, where the death in the company's name refers to death to plastic water bottles. This touches on key ESG opportunities as well.
I love that. Well, that makes me think of kind of an offshoot of that with beverages, which is celebrities and celebrity sponsorship. Is that still a big trend today?
Absolutely. Celebrity brands are here to stay. They can be multi-billion dollar revenue businesses across categories like food and beverage, beauty, fashion. Celebrities have massive followings and are not defined financially by what made them famous, whether as an artist or an athlete. And their income outside of their profession can dwarf that from their day jobs. If you look at the top 10 accounts by number of followers on Instagram, there are lots of examples of celebrity brands. There's Selena Gomez with Rare Beauty, Dwayne Johnson with Terramana Tequila and Zoa Energy Drinks. Kylie Jenner has beauty, fashion, and alcoholic beverage brands. And Beyonce is an investor in a beverage company called Lemon Perfect. One category in particular to highlight within the celebrity brands is the impact of hip-hop on popular culture today. This is no longer under the radar. The hip-hop category has been around for 50 years and is global. It represents nearly a quarter of music consumption in the US, and nearly half of the most streamed artists globally have been hip-hop or rap artists. Because of the pull of hip-hop, you're even seeing food brands find creative ways to partner with artists. One of the fastest growing snack brands over the last several years is a company called Rap Snacks that partners with artists to create and sell branded snacks and drinks. These sales are in partnership with a number of different popular artists and deliver fun, trending flavor profiles in the products. Maybe just to wrap on celebrity brands, major talent agencies are taking notice as well. In some cases, investing in consumer companies through their venture arms directly, and in other cases, presenting these opportunities to invest in and support brands to their clients. Celebrity sponsorship can come in the form of being a part of the brand and marketing, but there are also plenty of examples where the celebrity may be more behind the scenes, providing multiple avenues for brands to be brought to the consumer.
Right. And I know health and wellness is a big, big category, but I'm kind of more interested in some of the more indulgent categories or things that might be a little less good for you. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, I think indulgent brands absolutely still have a place in the health and wellness world, and they can be viewed as cheat day treats to be enjoyed in moderation or even more than that. Touching on alcohol, ready-to-drink products have continued to grow in recent years, appealing to consumers that are looking for convenience and new flavors. Tequila is a hot area within spirits, showing continued growth. There are many new brands popping up, and growth is touching 20% year over year in some of those categories. In other forms of getting buzzed, cannabis is very much mainstream. It's not just Cheech and Chong who have partnered with cannabis companies. Martha Stewart has as well. So just some stats on cannabis. Lifetime cannabis incidence among U.S. consumers is about 50%. There are over 50 million U.S. adults who have used cannabis in the last year. And this is all while the product remains federally illegal. So if you think about including recreational, medical, and illicit sales, the total addressable market for cannabis in the U.S. is expected to approach $100 billion and competes with various alcohol categories in terms of scale and occasion.
Wow, $100 billion. Okay, well, I'd like to talk about something that we've talked about on this podcast coming from a few different angles, and that's brick and mortar retail stores. You know, our malls are clearly undergoing a lot of change, a lot of it not good, but it does seem like there's some green shoots there. So what are you seeing in malls and some of the new ventures?
Sure. Well, I think if you look at the headlines are stores are closing. But I think there's actually quite a bit more than just that. There are legacy brands that have been closing stores as consumers shop more online and change their spending habits. Though there are bright spots too, at top tier lifestyle malls, for example, that bring in a higher end consumer looking to shop at luxury stores. At these locations, we're also seeing experiential concepts that are able to drive traffic. Companies like Pinstripes, which offers a high-end dining experience with games such as bowling and bocce, mini golf operator Putt Shack, and even Lifetime Holdings. All these companies have been investing in real estate to support their growth opportunities in these types of retail locations. And then in terms of flexible real estate ideas, pickleball is the fastest growing sport in America. Over 35 million in the U.S. have played the sport in the last year. There's a significant investment going on in that sport today, and I wouldn't be surprised if you continue to see new courts popping up where there's available retail space. So as legacy brands shift more of their focus online, there's less need for significant retail square footage, and that can be replaced with more experiential concepts to drive traffic. Importantly, though, even digitally native brands are investing in brick and mortar. Online mattress company Sattva, for example, has been investing in its showrooms to drive awareness and trial. I think the point here is that brands are generally trying to be omni-channel. So as you see legacy brick and mortar businesses close stores, you're also seeing digitally native businesses open locations.
Yes, and as an avid pickleball player, I cheer this trend on. So stay on the notion of experiential trends. Can you elaborate on what you're seeing for today's consumer?
Sure. Yeah. So the idea of spending on experiences over things touches on the concept of what makes consumers happy. Coming out of COVID, we saw people go big on revenge travel. The Taylor Swift economy proved enormous and global. And Live Nation had its best year ever, selling 620 million tickets to its events. So I expect these trends to continue where consumers are willing to spend on travel, entertainment, experiences that they keep as memories versus tangible goods that are spent on. And what helps to define a person as who they are and also trying to keep up with the expectations they see on Instagram, these experiences are part of someone's personal highlight reel. It feels perhaps less tacky, too, to post where you're eating and traveling to than it does to brag about the stuff you're buying. So maybe just digging in a little deeper, I think Las Vegas is a perfect example of this trend. And you may see other cities try to build this in a smaller yet similar fashion. Las Vegas has luxury shopping, fantastic restaurants, and has become a destination for shows and sports. The Sphere in Las Vegas costs $2.3 billion to build, and it's the most expensive entertainment venue in Las Vegas. It's being called the future of live entertainment, and single shows have grossed over $100 million. Las Vegas also hosted the Super Bowl this year, and total spending activities around the Super Bowl weekend have been estimated to be over $1 billion. Other cities with new sports venues are now considering development in and around the neighborhood as a key part of the plan, creating almost a lifestyle center around a particular venue. Switching gears a little bit, as a parent, I see significant investment into youth sports for my own kids. The gear, the lessons, the scheduling, and the travel are now all expected as part of participating in youth sports. Last year saw family offices invest in Ripken Baseball and Cooperstown All-Star Village in the youth baseball area, and I expect that trend to continue. I think the consumer is also becoming edgier and more extreme, making what was once extreme now mainstream. On the fitness side, marathons, Tough Mudders, boot camp classes, and other extreme competitions are large industries with a rabid following. As an example, there are thousands of people who have gotten tattoos of the Tough Mudder logo put on their bodies. So sports as an industry is going to continue to grow across age groups. It's a massive consumer opportunity in the coming years with meaningful expected capital deployment in those areas. And maybe just speaking of tattoos, what was once considered edgy, tattoos are now mainstream. Roughly 50% of U.S. adults aged 18 to 40 have at least one tattoo. If you look at younger generations, this trend is accelerating into what is a billion-dollar plus growing industry, growing at over 10% a year. Tattoos are a way for a consumer to express themselves artistically and is part of the edgier, more authentic trend that we touched on earlier. I expect there to be significant innovation and investment in the tattoo industry going forward, and you may even see larger strategics and venture and private equity investors deploying capital in the sector. Historically, the tattoo industry has been highly fragmented, and tattoo artists have been limited by the very manual artistic process to deliver a tattoo. I expect to see technology disrupt and help grow the industry in the coming years, and with this disruption, we'll certainly see new companies to invest in.
Right. And I feel like I have to ask you, because it's something that we always like to talk about on this series, and that's capital markets activity ahead. Any predictions on combinations, M&A, or do you expect IPO activity to pick up in your sector?
I think we're seeing a lot more discipline in investing today versus some of the excitement around the trends in the first few years of COVID. We're seeing investors who are willing to be patient and see stories prove themselves out consistently over time. That's both in terms of growth and profitability, which was less relevant in 2020 and 2021. There's a strong backlog of really exciting consumer companies looking to go public when the markets open up. And I think once that happens, if the stocks trade well, that will give investors more confidence to put capital to work in new growth stories as well. But exits are important, and to drive that activity, we need to see those exits. We've been in this historically low period in terms of M&A and IPOs over the last few years, and we're looking to break through that. So if IPOs can break through the logjam this year, I think we'll have lots of reasons to be optimistic about the future for consumers and consumer companies, especially for those that address the key trends we've touched on today.
Okay. Well, in the spirit of breaking that logjam, I'd like to turn this a little bit more personal with your efforts at Oppenheimer. I know that, you know, you've been on the move and building the team. So can you talk a little bit more about your efforts and plans at Oppenheimer in consumer?
Yeah, well, it reminds me a lot of the fun, exciting growth consumer companies we work with. We are also growing our team as well. So, as I mentioned, our team is focused on the growth areas within consumer that we talked about today, including food and beverage, restaurants, experiential, health, wellness, personal care are examples, and we'll look to continue spending time in those areas going forward. I'd like to touch on what attracted me to the Oppenheimer platform is really our focus on delivering full service investment banking advice and execution to growth-oriented companies, particularly those in the middle market. At the firm, we've got great research analysts, very active capital markets team, and M&A and advisory colleagues all working together to advise our clients on raising capital and strategic alternatives. I think at times, investment banking as an industry has gotten a bad rap, but a quick plug for what we're trying to build here as a team in terms of motivated and passionate colleagues who care about our clients and dedicate our time and efforts to the job. Now, while the hours can be long, I feel really fortunate to be in a position to learn about great companies that are delivering great products and services and helping them achieve their strategic objectives. And to that end, on a hopeful note here, I'm inspired by friend and CEO Ron Rudzin, who has written about the importance of hiring nice in building a culture. That's something I really respect and look to build with our team's culture as well.
Nice in building a culture. I like that. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your first foray on the Let's Talk Future podcast, and I hope that we have the opportunity to do this again soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Future. We know your podcast listening options are endless, and so we're glad you're spending time with us. Don't miss out on our next episode, and remember to subscribe today. Join our community to expand your thoughts on business, the markets, and the dynamic forces affecting them. It's time to talk future.